The Southwest Tech Daily Podcast.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Southwest Tech Daily Podcast. I'm Robert Hillier.
And I'm Fiyaza Khan. We're posting the podcast a bit later than usual this month because we wanted to give you guys the chance to get over the Easter holidays. But today we're diving deep into tech women, how they feel and what's stopping them from achieving more.
That's right, we have Caitlin Gould, who is at the forefront of bringing more women into tech, starting at grassroots level.
I'm really happy to out myself as the person that regularly goes into my local Sainsbury's and moves the space clothes into the girls' section. My local Sainsbury's wants to know who's the person doing that. It's me, I'm doing it.
We also speak to Emma Mallett from Optimizing IT, who talks about the discrimination against younger people in the workplace.
I now am teaching myself about cybersecurity in my spare time. There's nothing stopping anyone from having new interests throughout their career and being able to turn that into their job role.
They were really both great, and I enjoyed my chat with Caitlin. We talked about how to get more girls into tech and the barriers they face from themselves. Should we play that one first?
So it's been a really interesting, I'd say, year, 18 months. With Kensa Health, we went through probably a really normal thing with startups where we got a little bit of funding and some grants that really focused us in a particular direction, but also added a huge amount of stress and pressure. And put a lot of pressure on us as two kind of female founders trying to do it around having toddlers as well. So it was exciting and it was fun, but we sort of lost ourselves a little bit. So once the grant was done, we decided to take a pause and recalibrate a bit and decide what we were working on. And for me, that was really perfect timing because the kind of ebb and flow, the way things work is with tech girls and tech women right about that same time also really started to pick up speed and we got a lot of really exciting things happening. So in terms of what's going on with that, again, in the last 2 years, really, tech girls has had a massive explosion of activity. We formed Tech Women CIC as the formal holding company of Tech Girls. So that's our proper company now. And with that, we've expanded out our offering as well. So we still have the Tech Girls, we're calling now the Tech Girls Project. And that project still continues to work with girls, kind of especially focused on primary school, although occasionally getting pulled into year 7 and year 8. But we've also added to the mix a new program called Digital Uplift, which is an online training course helping women explore and get to know the digital ecosystem and understand the roles and opportunities in digital jobs. And we've continued to grow kind of a Tech Women network and support around that space. So all of those projects has meant a lot of new things going on, and that's really been a huge focus for me, especially the last 6 months, really.
So Tech Women CIC is now also Tech Girls. Is that what you're saying? So that's everything all together.
Exactly.
How do you manage your time? it makes sense because obviously it's about all of the women in tech, I suppose, girls from a young age, etc. But how do you manage your time with all of that? That's a lot.
It is a lot. And I definitely, coming out of last summer, I needed to kind of take a really big pause and figure out, okay, where am I going to focus stuff and how am I going to make it work? The great thing is with Tech Women, we've not only grown in terms of projects and delivery, but also with the team. So it was, it started just kind of me and running it from, I remember being heavily 9 months pregnant and posting out 100 microbits to girls around Cornwall, sat on my living room floor, through to now. We've got six women on the team. We do hire all people. We just happen to have a team of women. And I think that's been a really important part and something I've really learned a lot is that as we bring on a new project, and we go and out and find funding for that project, that always comes with bringing on a person to help run it. And that way we can make sure that we maintain the kind of quality of delivery and and our objectives of wanting to make sure we have an impact. Because even if things are free and with the best intentions, if you're pulled too thin, then it's not going to be good for anybody.
No, that's so true. And speaking of the fact that you have two startups, basically, that you have launched and you're part of, and we've just had International Women's Day, you're the kind of person who really does a lot for women in tech in general, but then you've also got this health startup. What led you to launch that? I know we've talked about it before, but I wonder if you could just give us a little recap.
In some ways, both of them kind of came out of a point in time in my life where I'd actually recently felt pushed out of a business I've been working in. And in some ways, you know, especially keeping in mind with International Women's Day and that whole invest in women and that push for the fact that we haven't got any women, or we've got very few women in senior leaderships in the tech industry. Having known what it was like to be going through that, having gone through some toxic experiences and kind of felt pushed out of it, I do think that when I set it all up, I really jumped into it with something to prove. I felt like I had something to prove to myself that maybe I'd been unappreciated and underestimated. And something to prove to others that kind of, look, if you take the reins off, look what I can achieve and accomplish. And 2 years on from that, being able to kind of reflect back on it, I might have tried to prove myself a bit too much at the same time. But I think, you know, I there is something in that freedom of finally being able to be my own boss and do my own thing that made me want to tackle two of the biggest problems that we're dealing with in terms of the women's health challenges, as well as the lack of equality in the tech space. So I think the other thing that's really interesting about both of those and why I'm still in it with both of them is I did found them and start them and have and been supported all the way through by an amazing group of women. You know, my co-founder Rose on Kenza Health, you know, she and I have been through a lot together on it. And actually, you know, we just met up again this morning for a new strategy session on thinking about where we take it forward. And even though it's kind of gone in lots of different directions, I think working together on that and having that support has really allowed it to go. She was a big reason why I started the business. I met her at a mum's postnatal pregnancy class, exercise class. I heard somebody the other day on social media saying how actually mums do a lot of networking and it's not on the golf course, but it doesn't mean it's not as serious. And the amount of some of the female led networking that goes on in soft plays and mummy groups can actually be kind of alongside of what can happen traditionally on the golf course. And that's literally what happened with Rose and I. We met at one of those groups and started it out. I think for us, we really wanted to change things for women and really empower them in women's health. And for me, that's a core thing that runs through both businesses. It might not be as obvious that they're connected as it is to me, but really both of them are really focused on how do we empower women more in the spaces where they're traditionally overlooked or not listened to.
No, I think it's actually really important. As someone who actually has never felt hurt in the medical industry, and I have quite a few health issues, but I think as a woman I always felt disregarded, and I think it's really important to have spaces where people believe you and then you get help, the help that you need sooner. So it's amazing that you've done this. But you know, you have quite an extensive background in tech, and it's not just been with women, but I'm sure you might have had to be in positions where you would have had to find ways to promote diversity. And I wonder whether you found any specific strategies in helping to create spaces that women feel comfortable applying for, or jobs that women feel comfortable applying for within the tech industry.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one with tech women, especially, and even with tech girls. One of the things I got asked a lot when we started is, can you help us recruit more women into our tech company? And at the time, I wasn't quite sure how to answer it without saying, yeah, I could come in, but you would have to completely re-change your hiring processes and a lot of things. But I think really there's some really simple changes that people can make if they just knew about it. So one of the really simple changes is really having a look at the processes you're going through when you're doing recruitment. So it's been said a few times now, but really looking at your job ads. And there's a number of different tools you can use to check and see if there's any gender coding in your job ad. I'm more surprised now when people don't use it, that people, you know, need to still be told about it. And especially with AI, I think we have to be really, really careful if people are jumping onto the bandwagon of using ChatGPT to write job descriptions, which is potentially a great use for AI. But if you're writing it for a job description that maybe traditionally has been held by men, you've got to be really careful that it doesn't weave in these biases into the description. So even if you would use a tool, still running it through a checker to make sure that there's not coded bias in the language. And what I mean by that is often language that can be intimidating, or language that can overemphasize qualifications. So people think, oh, well, I'm not going to apply for it unless I'm really, really, really good at that. But there's another really simple thing that I've been frustrated with recently is increasingly companies do offer flexible working, but oftentimes it's something that's kind of in the fine print at the end of an ad. And there's a lot of women who I know who looked at jobs and gone, oh, you know, I'd be good for that, but it doesn't say anything about being able to work from home, or I don't know if I'd be able to do it for 3 days a week or 4 days a week. And in instances, sometimes I've known the people hiring and I've asked them, would you allow this? And they said, absolutely. And I said, great. Can you please put it right at the top of your job advert? Because I know a lot of really, really talented and skilled women that would go for that job, but they're too intimidated to ask you before they apply. So if you can put it out there, and I think, you know, I think you'd get a lot of men that want that as well. I think it would just open it up to a wider variety of people. And if you're going to offer it, why not say it? Instead of asking people to chase you down for it. So I think those are two things that are pretty easy that people could do tomorrow to start making a difference on it. The other thing that we're really putting a lot of pressure on, and I think, again, ties back to some of the conversations about International Women's Day, which is if you want to hire more women, you need to make sure that it's a place where women can work. So you can do, your HR team might want to hire more women and they could be amazing and do all sorts of things to allow you to hire more women. But if the culture of the business and people in the company don't feel welcome, accepted, listened to and respected, they're going to leave. And I think that's one of the interesting trends that people like Tech Talent Charter are starting to point out, is not just the difficulty of hiring women into the business, but also the risk of women leaving because the businesses aren't a female-friendly place. And that's some of the stuff we started to work on a bit with Kenza Health, was looking at creating women's health courses for the workplace. So taking it beyond just menopause, because that's only one small, it's a big thing, but it's only one element of women's health. And actually we've created a course that looks at 8 different topics of women's health and how it impacts the workplace. And again, a lot of that is kind of crossing over and how to make the workplace a better place for everyone to work.
I mean, yes, I agree with everything that I don't even know. But what are the checkers that you can use to change your language to make it more diverse or more open to women or other minorities, I suppose we could say, applying to them?
That, so you make a really good point. When I was at a software company and we did do non-biased language in all of our materials, so not just in our job adverts, but across the whole of the website, we didn't just see an increase of applications from women. We also got an increase of applications from less experienced people who had been intimidated by the website before, but were actually really good and, you know, quite new, but really excited and really easy to learn and very interested in joining the company. And in the past, it's not just women who get intimidated, it's worth saying. We also hired more older people who also felt like we were a more inclusive company. That also helped, I should say, the last kind of piece of the puzzle is also allowing people to submit information without a CV, so you can get an idea of their experience. Some companies run it as a test, prefer to call it an exercise. Even the language of test makes it sound a bit scary to some people. But allowing people to show off their skills rather than their race or their gender or their age, or even their ability. And if people can get jobs based on the skills that they provide, that's a better match for everybody. In terms of tools, there's so many that come out all the time. I would probably just Google it the nicest possible way. There's a bunch of different gender bias tools that you can find. And again, they're constantly kind of changing and improving. So I would look at a few different ones. They're usually all free.
Yeah. And actually, like you said, I mean, especially after COVID, more and more men are interested in flexible working as well. And, you know, more and more men are seeing the value of being home with their families. And I think they probably always had, but now we have the opportunity for that. So why not take advantage of this huge, horrific thing that happened to the entire world, but changed our lives and in some ways for the better. So, you know, I feel like we should grab that opportunity, and instead of making it a negative in what happened to all of us, it can actually be a positive. So I think it's a really good, it's a good way to turn something bad into something good. But also with regards to, what was I going to ask you about? Damn it, gender bias. Oh yeah, so on the podcast this month, we are talking specifically about not just about women, we're actually talking about just getting people from, I would say, lower socioeconomic backgrounds into tech. We're talking about getting women in tech, and how do we do that? How do we create, you know, diverse spaces in tech for people? Because it can be intimidating. The whole thing, startups are intimidating in general, right? Because it's quick and, you know, things are just happening so fast and people just don't know where they fit in then and whether they can fit in then. It's a whole new concept. And so we're looking into that. And I saw this research that said that men would apply to job adverts if they are only 30%, if it's something like, if they only like got 30% of the attributes, women will only apply if they've got like 90% of the attributes. So I think the language that we use is actually super important. And if it's inclusive and if it just says, you know, preferred, or in certain roles or something like that, you might feel more inclined to apply than if it said you absolutely have to have, I don't know, a Harvard degree or whatever it is. So it's just important in the language that we use. I don't know what point I was making there.
That's okay. I was going to say, I think you made a really good point in terms of how the tech industry and the digital sector is really keen to get more women in. But actually, it's not an easy sector to break into, even if you are really experienced and talented, so it's one of the reasons why we set up the Digital Uplift Program with Tech Women. We worked with Truro and Penwith College as well to help set it up. And what we wanted to do is we were trying to understand, there's all these great boot camps and different pathways and tech companies offering, you know, routes in for women, and yet they're still struggling. And we caught up with some people running the boot camps, they weren't getting women on them. And we're just trying to figure out, okay, well, what is stopping women from wanting to take part? And what we decided to do is basically kind of start at the beginning and speaking, you know, the most important thing, actually talking to women and sitting down with them and going, what would you consider a job in these spaces? And a lot of co-creation, which is so important when you're looking at inclusion. And we sat down with them, and the truth of the matter was, is they had didn't know where to start. Like you said, the startup industry is intimidating. We use language that nobody's heard of. There's job titles nobody's heard of. And so they don't know where they would fit or if they would fit. And it sounds like something you've got to be an expert in. And if you're in the tech industry, you know that some of this technology is only a few years old. Nobody's an expert in it. But if you're outside it, it feels completely unattainable. So what we wanted Digital Uplift to be was to be an introduction that almost created a bridge. So the idea is that it's 8 weeks. It's completely free for women to take part. But really importantly, because again, free isn't always free. So if you have to spend 8 weeks in a classroom that you have to drive to and you can't work while you're doing it and you have to pay for childcare, that's not, none of that is free. So we made it pre-recorded videos that women could watch anytime in their own time. They could pause it, rewind it. So that brought in a bunch of accessibility features as well with subtitling too. But really importantly, each week is just an introduction to a topic. So it's not a deep dive, but you get a broad sense of this is the sector. And we tied each week to a Southwest-based employer. So 1 week, for example, was an introduction to software programming and coding. Another week was an introduction to AI. What is it? And, you know, what are the jobs in it? Our first week is actually just an introduction to the ecosystem itself. So here's what jobs are. This is how teams are structured. This is what these job titles are, what they mean. And then we've also got a couple of weeks that really focus on the confidence side of things. So a week on how to rewrite your CV when you're thinking about applying for a tech company, explaining how you might be asked to do an exercise or a test and that's okay. That's a normal thing to do. And, you know, even how to interview, you know, that it's all right to wear jeans, but don't wear, little things like that. And it was really amazing. We launched this last February. We've just been doing it for a year. We've just now had our new cohort start. We've so far had over 50 women go through the project. 7 of them have gone into new jobs. And we've got 25 on the new cohort that's starting now. And I think the thing that probably has shocked me the most is, and it sounds ridiculous, but the caliber and quality of the women on this course has been so amazing that, you know, I kind of sit there and go, why aren't you already all in awesome tech jobs? You're all so wonderful. But so the big thing is there was a lot of confidence issues. They weren't sure exactly which job to apply for, where to start, who to be introduced to, how to do it. And I think we can't underestimate that intimidation element of it. And that actually for a lot of women, it's just being given that helping hand, being told we'd like to have you come on, being a friendly face and people that can give them that boost of confidence to go out and apply for it. And, you know, the women that got jobs on our course didn't necessarily get jobs because they learned in-depth skills from a 1 week section on what we've done. They got the jobs because they learned about the fact that these jobs were something they could even apply for. They discovered the opportunities to do it and they had the motivation and the support network to go out and push themselves further than what they've been doing so far.
Isn't it crazy that we're talking about this in 2024? It's just insane because I would have thought we would have been further along in the journey at this point.
So it's really funny. I had an interesting conversation. I've got a 10-year-old son who's had to deal with the fact he's really into tech and he's had to deal with the fact I run a lot of things that he's always welcome to come to, but he's not expressly invited to. And so his worldview, and I asked him this the other day, I said, what do you think about investment in women? Like, do you think it's fair? And he said, well, you know, I do think women do get a lot of things and it doesn't always feel fair to the boys. And I said, okay, that's a really good point. And I asked him, I said, well, you know, how many women do you think, like your mummy who started up a business, how many women do you think get investment? And he's got two parents that own their own businesses, so he kind of knew what that question meant. And his response was, oh, it's got to be like 80 or 90% of women. And I said, well, why do you think that? He said, well, because everybody wants women to do well. So they must all be wanting to give women money so that they can set up their businesses. And I had to say to him, I was like, actually, it's not that. Luckily, he's studying percentages at school, so we turned it into a lesson. But I said, you know, like keep going down, go down, go down. And it took about 10 minutes for him to get to 3%. And the fact that only, you know, while there is all of this, Yay Women and International Women's Day. And in 2024, we feel like we're such a gender positive society. And you hear all the time, oh, equality's gone far enough. When it comes down to it, in terms of actual hardcore numbers, we are so far away.
So this is so weird that you said that, because I was listening to Caitlin Moran's book, What About the Men? And in it, she has a conversation with some boys about like 17-year-olds or something. And they say the same thing. They say girls get a lot. And I don't know, I feel like Gen Alpha and Gen Z seem to have a different worldview to the one that we actually live in. And that's because they grew up in this female positive space. And that's why they feel that, but actually it's slightly skewed. So, I mean, it would be interesting to see what happens at some point. But having said all that, that is why it's so important to start these grassroots initiatives like you have with Tech Women CSE or Tech Girls, because we need to start girls young, right? And how do we do that? How do we make sure that, you know, there's take up of these roles, or how do we make them seem less intimidating for girls and women who want to apply?
Yeah, so I think there's a few different things. The first one, and it's kind of always been at the core of what we wanted to do at Tech Girls, was to start as early as possible. So the later you start, the more bias you get to battle with. And it is interesting, because you can say, you know, it's starting to get better on paper for the younger generations. But actually, you know, we did some research last year with a school that we were working with, and we sent a survey out to their year 8 students. And this is all the same school, so it's a really great controlled study. Same teacher, same opportunities. And there, we looked at how many kids had experience using technology at year 8. So it was interesting. You had a similar number of boys and girls saying that they'd done coding in school, for example, and software programming. Then the next question was, is your level of confidence in your ability on that? You know, I'm a coding superstar, down to like, I can kind of do it. With the boys, there was an exact correlation between the amount of experience they'd had with how confident they were on it. With the girls, none of them, not a single one, said that they were great at coding, even though they'd had the exact same amount of time and experience. And I think that's the thing, is it's hard to change that when they're in year 8. We're still trying to build up the confidence on it. And that's why we're talking to your 8s now. But really what we want to try doing, is get in there really early. So get in there in year 4 and 5 and have them start to not only have the experience with it, because that's starting to improve in schools, but also how do we build up the confidence, and how do we build up their own personal self-confidence about it. So we've actually got a new after-school club that we're running starting after Easter. And it's called the Microbit Mentors Club. And the idea is each week the girls get a chance to do some microbit coding within their school, and doing it alongside a teacher that's in the school. But really critically, the idea is that at the end of the club, the teacher is going to have 8 weeks of lessons that they can then go back and teach in the school. And we want the girls to then be the mentors that can go and help their peers and their classmates do those lessons. It's something we can then do to, one, help the schools and help the teachers. It's really hard running ICT lessons if you've never done them before. And lots of times kids have tech issues. So they get helpers, student helpers, to help them with it. But really importantly, it's that subtle mind shift change of seeing girls as leaders in this tech space, seeing them as, and those girls having that confidence too, of I can be a leader in this space, I can be excellent at this. Not just I can do it, but I can really be one of the best at it. And I think that we see that lack of confidence go from 8 to 80. And if we can change that, I think that will take us a long way.
So I just want to see if I misunderstood. What was the reason that girls felt like, even though they'd done the same amount of coding as the boys, why was there not that correlation between how confident they felt?
I would say what we keep seeing again and again is we'll see girls. So same thing goes for gaming. We know from research and data from the big companies that 50% of gamers are girls. But if you ask a girl to wear a shirt that says, "I'm a gamer," it's very, that most girls won't, aren't self-proclaimed gamers. So they're like, they're hidden gamers, they're secret gamers. They'll talk about games if you get them onto the topic of it. But I mean, it doesn't help that they can't really buy a Minecraft shirt in the girls section anyways, if they wanted to, but a lot of girl techies are quiet about it. And they don't want to put their heads up, about it. And I'm not sure what age that starts at. But that's one of the key things that we're looking to try to see, like if we can give them enough support and encouragement around it, can we help make them more confident and more outspoken about it? I mean, every direction possible, girls are kind of encouraged to quiet their voice and kind of be more, you know, from the t-shirts to the journals to the books. It's all about gratitude and kindness and, you know, almost encouraging them to be humble. And you go and you see the guys' ones and it's like, you're a rock star and you're amazing. And, you know, and I think it comes from every single direction possible. So if we can do stuff to try to help girls, give them a voice and stand up and be really proud of what they're doing and see themselves as experts in it, you know, we do at the moment just have to push them that much further on it. Something as well, I think potentially we're looking at as an organization, which is, have we been too patronizing as well? You know, we've traditionally not really talked about the fact that there aren't girls in tech because we didn't want to skew their view on it. But we're realizing that maybe we need to talk more proactively at a younger age, that actually a lot of young girls are really into activism. You know, if they can handle the concepts of global warming, they could probably handle the concepts of kind of gender inequality. And, you know, should we be talking about this more? Could that also help boys understand more of why it's important, why we exist for girls? If they realize that this is a problem we're trying to overcome. And could that maybe also ignite a bit of a rebel spark in the girls that do want to kind of push back and go, okay, cool, like I'm going to shout louder now.
Yeah, I love that. And I mean, don't even get me started on girl sections and boy sections. It drives me, 50% of my kids' clothes come from the boy section and they're both girls and they're teens now, they're 13. But you can't find a Minecraft shirt in the girl section. You can't find a Spider-Man shirt in the girl section. You can't find, I mean, honestly, it's crap in the girl section. The t-shirts are ridiculous. Who wants to wear something with a big heart with googly eyes on it? Nobody.
That's yeah, well, I'm really happy to out myself as the person that regularly goes into my local Sainsbury's and moves the space clothes into the girls section.
Good.
My local Sainsbury's wants to know who's the person doing that. It's me. I'm doing it. I do it on a regular basis.
even the shoes, though, like girls' shoes compared to boys, like teenage girls' shoes compared to teenage boys' shoes. I'm like, what is this? They don't want to wear this. They want to wear, you know, really cool trainers. They don't want to wear whatever it is you've decided they should. It's very bizarre. Anyway, moving from that, last question. What advice would you give to women who really want to excel like you have in high stakes businesses within tech? And especially as we've discussed, you know, so many women suffer from imposter syndrome. They have the skills, but they don't feel like they have the skills. Or even when they're in the jobs, they don't feel like they have the skills. So what advice do you have for them?
I think one of the probably hardest lessons I learned in the last couple of years in terms of trying to do female-led startups is I was trying to exist and grow and be in a space that really wasn't created for women. You look at the startup cycle and the hype cycle behind it, and it's, you know, it's asking you to put in all sorts of crazy hours to run all around the world, to ask for money for people that probably aren't going to give it to you, and, you know, burn out or get out practically in terms of the mindset. And one, it's not healthy, don't do it. But two, it really, it doesn't allow space for all the different kinds of female startup founders that might be out there, especially not female founders that have children. So I think the biggest advice I would give is don't try to set up a startup from a model that you've seen out there. Because one, the industry is realizing that's not sustainable and healthy anyway. And two, it's not going to work. And you'll end up potentially, I mean, it can work for some people, but for a lot of people, that doesn't work. And that's men and women. For a lot of people, that traditional way of working doesn't work. And you can get pushed into a product or a service or a company that's so far removed from what your vision was as well, when you're kind of chasing and in that hype cycle. So what I would say is move at the pace that feels right to you and your business, and work on the products that really make you want to stay up late and work on them, make, you know, that drive you and make you happy, and that, you know, are going to really make you feel fulfilled as a founder, because you are doing a lot for very little money, if any. You're really pushing yourself out there. It's really hard. So if you're not doing it for something that's going to give you that reward back, then you need to really think about what, you know, what you're getting from it.
What a great conversation. And having girls ourselves, I see the importance of boosting this learning from a really young age.
Right. I really related to what you were saying about moving all the space stuff in Sainsbury's to the girls section. I mean, why the heck isn't it there in the first place?
I don't know. However, Fayaza, have you ever felt ignored or patronized because of being young or being a woman?
Yes, especially when I was younger and I was in a space with much older people who probably, because of the way I dressed, because, you know, you would dress a certain way when you're younger, and maybe because of the way I spoke in normal conversation, I think people tended to underestimate me, and I feel like they thought I think what was really frustrating, and I think you can tell how angry I am actually now just thinking about it, is that so many of those people, first of all, were journalists who couldn't spell, who had no basic reporting techniques, and had no idea of a basic political history when they were reporting on politics. Yet they had the audacity to judge me. It was very annoying. Why are you asking?
I mean, yes would have been fine. But anyway, you're not alone. Emma Mallett from Optimizing IT's experienced this as a young woman in tech and now wants to do something about it. Talk to her, but first we spoke about her role as marketing manager at Optimizing IT.
Optimizing is different because it's a certified B Corporation, which means that it's a business that cares about people and planet, as well as just being a business, which is really nice, especially in an IT company. It's a really nice alternative way of doing my job role.
Tell us a little bit about why you've decided to tell other people about some of the things you've gone through, and why you think it might still be an issue.
Age discrimination in I think my networking and the business world down in the Southwest is absolutely a thing. It's something which I could say I come across at least weekly. And I do think as well, within the tech and cyber industries, I think it's also almost an even bigger thing. So being a young woman in tech and cyber, there's lots of support out there, but there are still a lot of situations that I come across where I just think, I don't know if this would happen to me if I wasn't who I am. And there's lots of other people who are young adults who I speak to, and they also say the same thing. So just to give an example, I could be at like a cyber conference event, and everybody will go and speak to our MD, but no one will, like, sometimes people won't acknowledge me as someone to also speak to about cyber or tech. And, you know, I'd like to also be able to talk about cyber and tech. So I think that there are lots of things that need to change. I think there's a severe lack of misunderstanding, especially in the Southwest, of the value that young adults can bring and how that can be equal or not better, but yeah, as valuable as anyone else any other age. And I think I want to advocate for that because I have come from an area, so my scholarship at uni, that was a really supportive environment for young adults who were really keen to do lots, and whether that's creating community impact businesses or going out networking and being really proactive, that was really celebrated because their value was seen. And I just think that in the Southwest, there's so much potential of the value of young people, especially in tech, and it's not being utilized or given the opportunity to prove itself.
You see the same thing happening to young men at events?
Yes, I do. Absolutely. I have a lot of friends who are similar age to me who are men, and they say that they also come across similar things. So I think there are, it's hard to say because I don't know the full facts, but yeah, there are also a lot of people that I know who are young men who also come across the same situations.
What do you think it is about working in the UK that makes this an issue, or have you noticed it around the world as well?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that in other countries, there's so many startups, especially tech startups, that are funded and or started up by younger people. And I would love to see that happening over here in the UK a bit more. Myself and a lot of my friends, a lot of the people I did my scholarship with, have all questioned, why is it different in the UK? And I think it does stem down to, I think just like a difference in beliefs and trust, and I guess understanding of the power of the potential of, I guess, giving young adults the opportunities to take startups to the point that they could be successful. I think it's down to lack of funding and lack of education and lack of opportunities and understanding.
Ask, I mean, how it's not your job to do it, is it really? But how much do you feel the need to intervene and say, you know, you can talk to me as well about this? It's difficult, isn't it, being placed in these awkward situations?
Yeah, I find it really hard because I'm not, you know, I'm not a very confident person, and sometimes in situations I just don't feel confident enough to speak or to say, you know what, I don't feel comfortable with this. But there's also another part of me that is so keen to see that change. And I think I decided when I decided to kind of start my career down in the Southwest, I knew that there were things that needed to change. And I just thought to myself, if I want to see that change and I don't think it's happening, then I just have to be one of the people to help bring that change to happen. So there is part of me that just thinks, you know what, like, okay, I need to be confident. And I say, even if it's not for me, it's for someone else. It's for another young adult, which I know, or another woman in tech or cyber, which I know. If I can speak up and raise attention to it and bring awareness of it happening so that it doesn't happen to someone else, at least that gives me a bit more confidence sometimes to perhaps speak up.
Do you think a lot of it does come down to those social skills around confidence and the ability to feel comfortable speaking in public, and those softer sort of officey skills, which I think often you pick up just by virtue of getting older, but so much of them are teachable, aren't they? And maybe it's just a case that when you're younger, you just haven't, you don't get there. So it's having help and intervention, like you say, to help people have that confidence and that ability to make themselves heard.
Yeah, I think it's 50-50. So I think it's so important to give young adults growing up in the Southwest opportunities in STEM, and also helping them to build their soft skills whilst working in STEM, so that when they enter the tech and STEM workplace, they already have those soft skills, so they have the confidence to speak and have conversations. But for them to be able to do that, we also need the current business community and tech community to support them and not, I guess, diminish the confidence that they may build from their soft skills, because it could take just one bad experience with someone to put a young person off going back and doing something again when they could have a really groundbreaking idea. So yeah, I think it's 50-50.
And as you say, it certainly wouldn't happen in the US, where they seem much more open about people's ages and are much more willing to take risks on people's ability and ideas, aren't they? So how do we transfer that to here?
Yeah, and I think, you know, doing the podcast like you guys do is a great way to start. It's enabling people the opportunity to have a voice. And it's also enabling people, especially young adults and women, to listen. So it's giving them the opportunity to be part of conversations that they may not have been part of before.
So there was a particular incident in your life which seemed to drive you on to taking a more active role in mentoring. Can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, sure. So when I was 18, I was at college. So I lived away at college, and I was involved in a bad car accident where I was hit by a concrete mixer in my car. And that led me to sustain a brain injury and a spinal injury. And that put a complete stop to my whole life and a complete stop to my career. And I received mentoring from different individuals, and then mentoring through my subsequent scholarship at uni, that enabled me to rebuild my life and my career and build those soft skills back up again. So I'm really, really passionate about giving others the opportunity to build their skills and build their confidence and build their careers through the power of mentoring. And I'm really passionate about the importance of this within tech as well, and supporting those people that are in within the STEM industry.
What gap did you see? Did you see straight away that there was a need for this to take place?
Yeah. So for me personally, from my personal experience, had I not had that mentoring, I don't think I'd be here today. Like, I don't think I'd be in my career today. I wouldn't be on this podcast. I wouldn't be doing, I don't think, any of the things that I'm now doing. And then when I was at uni, I studied animal science and did a business scholarship. And I did see this difference in confidence in, I guess, oneself in their career and themselves, and also out networking and that connection within more the science and STEM side of my degree compared to the business side of my degree that was in the business school. So I saw from the beginning that there was a difference. And then as I've moved back to Exeter and become more involved with the Chamber of Commerce, so I'm on the board for Exist, and working within tech and cyber, and then also being involved in some other, I guess, businessy things, I've still seen this difference. So I'm really excited about the potential that Exeter has in supporting the next generation and young adults to reach their potential. And I think that will come back around when they enter the economy in Exeter. And I think that will really, really boost Exeter as a city. And I think Exeter will become a leading city in terms of tech in the next 5-10 years. And I'm really excited to be part of it.
So did you feel that there were lots of things going on, and what you've been able to do is make some of those connections and pull people together so they get more of an overview of some of the potential of the work that's taking place?
Yeah, I guess so, but I think it's also been down to the support of other people who have enabled me to make those connections between different people. Ileana and Camille and Jess being some of those people who have enabled me to do that. I think there are so many people out there in the Southwest who are so keen to support others, and I think it's really important to champion them for what they're doing.
What is it you think about Exeter that has something that's really appealed to you?
So I grew up down here. So I've always loved living down here, and I had the typical grad mindset and quite a thought process of, do I move to London to start my career there, or a major city? And I had seen a few of my friends do that, and they weren't 100% happy. And I had always felt that I wanted to live somewhere like Exeter, because where else do you get to go to work and then go for a surf after work, or go hiking on the weekend? So it's such a lovely place to live. And I decided this is where I want to start my career. And I think Exeter, I don't think it's such a city that's almost on the edge of what it could be in terms of being an advocate city for sustainability and tech, and especially with things like Exeter Science Park. There's a lot going on, and I think it's a good place to be now. And I think it will be a lot more like Bristol in 5 years.
One of the things that's often difficult, isn't it, for people when they're at school and deciding what to do, is if they're interested in tech, and of course as a young person now, then tech is just part of your life. It doesn't separate out from anything else, is it? It's just part of what you do. Yet that pathway into tech can sometimes be a little bit daunting. I think it's interesting looking at what you did, which is, you know, you worked at Paint and Zoo, for example, before going into sales and marketing, and working in social media, that tech now doesn't have to mean, does it, doing a computer science course or understanding about coding, that any of the skills that you have that you want to build as part of your career can grow within the so-called tech industry, because it does encompass anything. Is that an important message, you think, to get out to people, particularly young women who still might find it difficult because of the language that's used and the male domination of so much of the tech industry?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I think tech isn't just an industry that you have to enter because you studied it at school or college or university. You can enter the industry later in your career, or early in your career. And I myself, so I now have a really, really, I'm really interested in cybersecurity, and that's because I've learned about it through my job. And I now am teaching myself about cybersecurity in my spare time. And there's, you know, there's nothing stopping anyone from having new interests throughout their career and being able to turn that into their job role. And I also think it's important to focus as well on non-tech specific roles within tech. So sales and marketing roles within tech actually are quite techy. So to be able to do the sales for an IT or tech company, you need to know every single product, what they do, the reasons why you do what you do as a business. And therefore, you need to have a deep understanding of tech. So absolutely. I think especially for young women as well, it can be super scary to enter the industry. But you just have to have a go and find things like Which and places you can get support to help you when it does get tough, because it is still a tough industry for a young woman. And the important thing is there's so many women that leave the tech industry by the time they're 30 and 40. And the most important thing is how do we retain those women who are interested in joining the tech industry? And that's what I'm really keen to do with Which, is help give the women the support that they need to keep them in tech.
So practically, what does that support look like? What are the reasons that people start to leave the industry, and what can practically be done
to make that easier, make that decision to stay and build a longer term career more possible?
There's so many different reasons, but I think it's that it's can be a scary world to be in as a woman, and also a lonely world to be in. There's also a severe lack of women in leadership roles, so it's harder for women to see examples of themselves and what they could do in their career in terms of career progression. So it can be quite easy to lose hope of, okay, that's where I could go. So I think it's really important to give women the support and community that they can meet other women who are going through the same thing, so they don't feel so alone. And then giving them access to soft skills, networking, workshops that can help them in their career, to really give them that equity to be on that career progression journey that is the same as anyone else in the industry.
Will you feel that what you're doing is working? What are you looking for, that kind of milestone of achievement in what you're trying to build? Is there a first that you want to tick off and say, yeah, we're making progress here?
I think it would be to have so like to see women in Exeter in the tech industries come together and meet and have that community and support for each other. It would be amazing to, I know that it already exists, but to I guess see it out there even more. And then also to be able to go to events in the Southwest, which are tech and IT cyber focused, where I don't feel that it's not 50-50 in terms of who's attending. That would be incredible. Because it's not at the moment. Yeah, I'd like to get to a point where Exeter feels like, or the Southwest feels like a place where you don't have to think about if you are a woman in the industry. You just think, okay, I'm an individual in the industry.
How much do you want to give and how much do you want to do before you think, I've done my bit? Or are you in this now and this is your world?
Oh, I won't stop. No, I'll never stop.
That was Emma Mallett from Optimizing IT. I related with so much of that. So thanks for bringing that conversation to light. Well, how was it having that conversation, considering I wasn't there? How was it having that for you?
Yeah, I just asked questions and listened. That's all you can do. She was really interesting.
Oh, you're so cute.
Unfortunately, or fortunately, that's all the time we have for today's episode.
But don't worry, be sure to tune in later this month as we delve deeper into diversity. We'll be talking with Tom Bright from Bright Evolve. By the way, do you like that alliteration? Delve deeper into diversity. Thank you. We'll be talking with Tom Bright from Bright Evolve on the work he's doing to bring more people from marginalized communities into tech and other workspaces.
Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode wherever and however you're listening. Also, thank you to the Hillier Twins for editing this podcast. Not bad for your first time. Stop sending us invoices. We have got the message.
Thanks, guys. And thanks to you for listening. See you later this month. Bye.
Bye.
The Southwest Tech Daily Podcast.